You reach for the top olive oils and invest in the best pans. But in the kitchen, how well do you care for your greatest tool, your hands? When mine take a beating cooking and cleaning, which is often, I use Bag Balm to work its wonders on my poor, distressed skin. Created 125 years ago on a Vermont dairy farm, their soaps smell great and clean hands without stripping moisture, and their fast-absorbing lotion means I can quickly get back to cooking. Treat your hardworking hands to Bag Balm, every chef's best friend. Use code FOOD52 for 20% off your order on bagbalm.com. Good through 2024.
At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
What's going on? I'm Peter J. Kim, and this is Counter Jam on the Food 52 Podcast Network, the show that celebrates culture through food and music. This episode is about the culture of a quite interesting country. I want you to guess which one. Here's a hint. This song you're listening to is from a group of musicians who are native to the country. Wee, it's France. What? Were you expecting Edith freaking Piaf? This is Landigo, a group from the island of Réunion, which is 100% a part of France. It's just located almost 6,000 miles away from Paris, off the coast of Madagascar. Thank you, colonialism. We're going to dig into French culture with three phenomenal guests. Pastry genius Dominique Ancel, French Top Chef star Maurice Sacco, and one of the most distinguished individuals in my life, Stéphanie Jacquemont, also known as my wife, or as I call her, Mon Chouchou Chérie. First up, let's give this track by Landigo a closer listen. It's from a music genre from the island of La Réunion called Maloya. It features vocal call and response and complex rhythms that originated among enslaved people on the island's sugar plantations. For the enslaved, this style of music was a weapon of resistance, to such a degree that at one point, it was banned by the French government. To my ears, it feels like the music of freedom. Freedom to be and freedom to dance. This is Domoun by Landigo. That was Domoun by Landigo. Oh, la belle France. I have strong connections with the country. I learned to speak French in Cameroon and then later did some graduate studies in Paris. I'll never forget when I first arrived in Paris. I had a thick Central African accent. And I got so many befuddled looks from folks who simply couldn't process this American guy who is Asian, who speaks French but with a Central African accent. Later in life, I met and fell in love with a French woman whom I would eventually marry. We met in Granada, Spain, thanks to flamenco music, and that's a story I'll get into in a forthcoming episode of this show. My point is this. I'm a Francophile. I speak French, I lived in France, I love French culture, my wife is French, and by extension, much of my family is French. So it's my distinct pleasure to pay homage to this culture. And I'd like to lead things off with my favorite French person, my wife.
Bonjour, Madame Jacquemont. Bonjour, Monsieur Kim.
Such a pleasure to have you.
It's so weird to have a conversation with you in the same home, but in a different story.
Stephanie and I have not been to France in 2 years. I asked her what food she missed the most. Was it the cheese, the pastries, the wine?
Good soy yogurt. Doesn't exist here.
Yes.
You remember. You yes. Tried it. It's really good.
I know. Yes, it's good. It's really different from the soy yogurt here. Yeah. The French have mastered yogurt.
Yeah, and the like supermarket, like the yogurt aisle in a supermarket also I miss. Each time I go to the yogurt aisle here, I'm like, eh.
Well, it's not so much a yogurt aisle here as a yogurt section.
Yeah.
Whereas in a French supermarket, it's the whole aisle.
It's one or two, yeah.
Stephanie is from the north of France, an area called Pas-de-Calais. It's not exactly the sunny, bucolic French countryside of Beauty and the Beast.
The north has a bad reputation. Mm. It was mostly well known for unemployment and being a gloomy place to live. It's also not like it's not very sunny. It's not a place people like tourists from overseas would pick because it's not very hot or warm or like sunny. It's rainy. It's if you think of London, it's probably something a bit similar in terms of weather.
So there's a cultural group in the north called the Ch'ti. These are folks who are from the north and they speak their own language, which is called Ch'ti. To give you an example of how the language is different from French, and I'm going to channel my inner Ch'ti here, in Stephanie's family, a story has been passed down about when her great-grandma ate ice cream for the very first time at a relatively old age. And as the story goes, she exclaimed, "Va no que c'est froid, mais va no que c'est bon," which translates in French to, "Mon Dieu que c'est froid, mais mon Dieu que c'est bon," which translates in English to, "God, it's cold, but God, it's good." As is the case for so many minority groups around the world who are poorer than the average and have distinctive accents, the Ch'ti are routinely mocked. There was even a hit movie in 2008 about the Ch'ti that basically reduced them all to stereotypes.
Well, in French, it's bienvenue chez les Ch'ti.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know in English what that would translate to. I guess it's welcome to Ch'ti country or welcome to the land of mm-hmm. the Ch'tis. But if I remember correctly, it was like somebody from the south coming up to the north, and then all the Ch'tis are kind of these country bumpkins, as we say in the U.S., and they're kind of backwards and but lovably backwards.
But very nice people. there's a saying that I hate that I never use or I use only as a joke is like the sun that we don't have in the sky, we have it in the heart. So cheesy.
In the land of the Ch'ti, one food is queen, and it's not the baguette. It's the potato.
To a lot of people, at least to like, so both my parents were born and raised in farmers' family. That was, yes, very, very, very important. Like pretty much every day, you eat potatoes. And my uncle still eats potatoes, I think, every day. My grandfather would eat probably every day, and he would almost never eat pasta, for instance. It was just like potatoes. Rice was acceptable, but potatoes and fries.
I mean, when I cook for your parents, I always know that if I can't think of anything else, I just have to throw some potatoes in the oven. And now it's what's really cute is that when it comes out, Your mom in particular will always react with some level of enthusiasm about that. Be like, ooh, patates.
Chef Dominique Ancel, known by many as one of the world's most wildly creative pastry chefs, is also from potato country in the north.
So potatoes was always like the number one starch in France. So you always put potatoes in your soup, always put potatoes in your meal.
Yeah.
whichever way you cook it, you always have potatoes.
Yeah, I think you might know this, but my wife, Steph, is from the north, Pas-de-Calais.
Yes, not too far.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a song that kids sing there that goes something like lundi les patates, mardi les patates, mercredi les patates, jeudi les patates, vendredi les patates. And I can't remember how it goes again, but then at the end it's like...
It goes dimanche les patates aussi.
Yeah, les patates aussi, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so if we did potatoes, it's normal. Either you do fries, either you like roast them, you boil them, you do mashed potatoes. There's like 100 ways of eating potatoes for French culture.
Like Stephanie, Dominique's hometown would not also have made the cut for Beauty and the Beast.
When I tell people I'm from France, they always like picture this like beautiful house, like with like lavender field and this beautiful landscape. Like, no, I'm not from there. I grew up in the north of Paris in a small town called Beauvais. It was actually not very charming. I grew up in a project. This is where I used to live with all my siblings. I have three siblings. My dad worked in a factory. My mom stayed home taking care of the kids. Grandma lived with us. We had many dogs and cats. Our cousin lived with us. So I didn't have much growing up. Food was definitely not the moment we were all waiting for to come together. My dad worked in factory, so very often he was bringing things from the factory, like frozen lasagna, like frozen pizza. Always buying fresh bread when we could afford it. We had like cassoulet in a can, lots of frozen stuff, frozen vegetables, canned food.
Once in a while, though, Dominique got a break from the frozen lasagna when he ate at his aunt's place.
I remember, like, being young, being at my aunt's place, because she had a larger place. She had a farm that they turned into a house. So a big dinner table with probably, like, 20, 25 people. I remember going there for, like, maybe, like, 11 o'clock in the morning, eating lunch until late during the day. And as a kid, you know, you're not allowed to leave the table until the adults are finished eating. So, of course, they eat and they drink and then they start playing cards. So, you know, it's a dinner that lasts from like noon to like 5 o'clock. And then they look at each other and they're like, do you want to stay for dinner? And I'm like, no.
This reminds me quite a bit of Sunday meals I've had with Stephanie's family in France, which are, well, epic. Things get going around midday with the apéritif, a fantastic French tradition that involves hanging out, listening to music, munching on finger foods and puffed snacks while sipping drinks. Then you sit down for the first course, which is usually a light opening dish like a terrine. Then there's a soup, and then after the soup, there's a main course, which involves a meat, a starch, and some side dishes. Then you've got the salad, and the cheese plate that goes around, along with bread. And then you've got dessert with coffee.
Usually when we're done eating, it's like 4:30. Yeah, so we've spent basically, 4 to 5 hours eating waiting to eat, making space for the next course.
And I mean, how was this for you when you were like a little kid, like having to be at the table for 4 or 5 hours?
That was not fun. And to this day, I mean, I like the big meals, but I think we also did that because, I mean, more so than maybe in the south of France, but in the north of France, on a lot of Sundays were gloomy, probably because it was the last day of the weekend for me. And I always felt like kind of ugh on Sundays. Yeah. But first, we were in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing to do on Sundays. So we stayed at home. But then we didn't like go out either, because usually the weather is not so inviting. And I realized that I paint a gloomy picture of my life and what life is over there. But that's true, though. That's my family. We wouldn't like rarely go out for a walk or things like that. So basically we stay at home on Sundays and TV's on at some point, most of the afternoon. And we just eat. And I guess that's what they did I think that's what they did too when they, like my parents, when they were kids, like it was church day and then big meal and family maybe gathering, like maybe aunts and uncles, but and then chatting. That's pretty much it. And so yeah, for a kid, it's not exactly fun. Like the dessert for me was always exciting, but yeah. The exciting part. And now I've come to like some aspects of that tradition, but I would make it, maybe if I had to make it my own, I would make it a little bit more active.
It's like dance party in the middle of the meal.
Yeah, why not? No, but you know, I don't know, a little walk or games or something.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I remember when I was first exposed to this, the meal would go on and would wrap up at like 4:35, but then you have like dinner just around the corner. And I remember at one point we were like eating, like I was eating like chocolates or my post-meal yogurt. And, and your mom was in the kitchen already kind of milling around and getting the food ready for dinner. And I was like, what the, like, what is going on? Because like, I mean, I'm at a point now where I actually just want to be horizontal and digest, you know, but now I actually had to kind of reframe my brain to be like, okay, I guess now we're going back into eating more.
On Sundays that could start again by an apéro if we have people over.
Yes.
So we would have two apéros in a row. Like you're barely done with dessert and coffee, and it's time for apéro.
Grueling as they may be, one thing that Dominique and Stephanie's family meals share in common, they are top-notch gastronomic experiences.
My aunt was a great cook. She actually had a garden. Mm. She had some fruits and vegetables. She had some, I remember she had like chickens and rabbits. She had some animals in there as well. She was growing a lot of vegetables. So this was something that like marked me in my childhood, where my aunt like would grow a lot of her own vegetables and herbs. Mm. She has a little herb garden. That was amazing. I think the one of the best things I've ever had, and I still remember to that day, she had those peaches that she bought the tree from Spain, and we call it like peche sanguine. So it's like this like blood color peach. So the peach were like deep red, almost like a beet color. And they were like, you know, we would pick them from the tree. They were like so juicy and so sweet and so flavorful. She would just like take off the skin, remove the pit, mix them with a little bit of like red wine and sugar. That's it. Just a tiny bit of red wine. She will macerate this for the afternoon and we'll eat this at night for dinner. It was like one of the most like memorable, like delicious food I've ever had growing up.
Another thing that they share in common, they involve a lot of kissing, especially when you've got a room full of 20 people or more.
And I remember like just the physical exercise of kissing everybody when you go into the room was just like so much work. And you have I would have to kiss every last person.
Yeah, you have to. It's tradition. Like French people are kissers. Where I'm from, it's four actually. So I give four kisses to everyone. So if there's 15, 20 people, it adds up to a lot of kisses.
And there you have it. Northern French folks do not mess around when it comes to their family meals or their kisses. I want to play for you another track from Landigo. This song is fascinating as it is the result of a collaboration between the group and a rumba ensemble from the island of Cuba. Two island music cultures separated by oceans coming together, and the result is pure dynamite. Here's Ahí Nada by Landigo with Los Muñequitos de Matanzas.
Sommes-nous à l'arrêt? Des vrais matos.
Inama by Landigo. Next up, we're going to take a step back and really get into the diversity and depth of culinary traditions across France. Stay tuned. My next guest, Chef Maurice Sacco, is one of the hottest chefs in France right now. He was born in Senegal to Malian and Senegalese parents and grew up in France. He's under 30 years old, made a name for himself as a fan favorite on Top Chef France, and he has since kicked off a TV show called Cuisine Ouverte that has drawn millions of viewers. He has also earned a Michelin star, the first in France for a restaurant that serves West African food. He is a straight-up badass. So what does a French Top Chef have in his refrigerator at home? As an avid fan of West African food, I was pretty excited to hear the response.
In my refrigerator now, we have a cheboujel for my mom. Because I don't cook home. I cook for my client, but at home, I don't cook. So when I go to see my mom, always she bring me some some dish. And now I have a big dish of cheboujel in my fridge now. It's all.
That's the only thing in your refrigerator if I opened it up.
Cheboujel and some butter and little milk and juice. That's all.
It's so funny. I mean, chef refrigerators at home are the saddest thing, aren't they?
My fridge is sad.
Quick sidebar. In case you aren't familiar with the joys of cheboujel, it's considered by many to be the national dish of Senegal. It's a deeply aromatic rice dish with fish and vegetables. It's kind of like jollof rice from Nigeria. Check out season 1, episode 4 of Counter Jam if you want to learn more about that.
My mom, cheboujel for me is the best in the world. She learned cheboujel in Senegal because she grew up in Dakar. And she have this special thing, you know, when you do the cheboujel, in the, how you say, in the, dans la casserole, you have this, the rice will burn, but just on the bottom. This rice burn, giving the, to the cheboujel in special flavor. So I can't do that, me. when I cook, I can't let it burn. So she do that, but it's normal. And this keep, really deep, like a smoky taste in the cheboujel, and I can't do that.
Yeah, in Korean cuisine, we call that nurungji, the little burnt bottom of the rice, and it's actually considered to be one of the best parts of the rice.
It's the best.
Yeah, and my dad, you know, and as you may well know, in a lot of East Asian cultures, people really respect seniority a lot. My dad is, he's almost 84 years old now. So he's old, you know, and so sometimes he will appropriate other people's nurungji at the table, and we have to give it to him because, you know, that's what he wants.
And my family too. It was a big fight with my brother and my sister to have this. So I was one of the smallest in the family, so I don't have this really, how can I say it? I cannot have. Because my big brother are more powerful than me, so my mother keep a little bit and give me. It's for you, Maury.
Is there a word for that? What would you call that?
No, we don't have word. We only have fight for that.
There you go. Well, actually, since you're talking about your family, as I understand it, you're blessed to have a very sizable family.
Yeah.
How big is your family?
We are nine children. I have five sisters and two brothers.
Wow.
Totally, we are 11.
Wow, that is amazing. And where do you fall in the order of the 9 children?
I'm the number 6 of 9 children.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I just think about what it's like to cook for 9 children. And I can't wrap my mind around that.
It's like to have a restaurant, but every day. My mom cook for 9 children, you know. Everyone have a special request. Oh, I don't like fish, I don't like meat. So she just have to to shut up and eat that.
Maury grew up in a culturally diverse suburb of Paris. Here's his take on it. And note that when he uses the word Maghreb, he's referring to people of North African descent.
Yeah, me, I grew up in the banlieue of Paris. Donc, I grew up in Paris and I don't move from Paris from my birth to now. And I was in the Paris, but not in the city. I was in the little campaign. And we walk like 15 minutes and we have the cows. I grew up with Chinese people, some Maghrebian people, and the black African like me. And everyone together, we are all French, but we are all different. So for me, it's a great experience, and I liked it. And for me, it's my vision of France. So we are all different. We have some French people, so we have some immigrants. But everyone grew up together. We go to the same school. We learn the same lesson. And at the final, it's a new French culture.
Yeah, yeah. And when you were growing up with these friends from all these different cultures, were you trying some of their food? Were they trying, you know, the Malian food you had at home?
So for me, yes, the culture is food in principally. So I have to go to my friend from Maghreb. I like their food, like tagine, pastilla, the shorba. It's really, I have to go in Ramadan period to eat in their home. I say, what your mama prepare for the for the tour? And now I do my menu and go there. It's a good process. And some friends are from African too, but from the Congo and the Cameroon. And their food is really different from the West African food. In fact, the French population is really about immigration. So we have first some Italian, they immigrate in France. If you have to know, the French are after the Italy, the second consumer of pizza and pasta. And after that, you have the Portuguese, and then you have the people from Maghreb, and at least you have the West Africans. So everyone comes there come with their own food, and now the number one preferred dish of the French people is couscous.
Even Dominique's dad, the man who brought home frozen lasagna and canned vegetables, was a fan of couscous.
You know, this is something funny because my dad used to make couscous growing up at home.
Oh, really?
We don't have any trace or origin in our family from Northern Africa, but we love eating it, and it was good. So my dad, throughout the years, like, found a great way of, like, he studied about it. He bought a lot of cookbook and found a way to make a good couscous. You separate the semolina from the vegetables and the meat, and it all comes together, like, steaming, and you eat it. Like, with the soup on the bottom, it's excellent.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's funny, yeah. Steph's mom also makes couscous. It's actually the only spicy dish she makes is with the merguez, which has a touch of spice, because otherwise her family can't even handle black pepper. You know, it's just too spicy.
No. Black pepper is too spicy for French people already. I do love spicy food, though. I love, like, really hot food, Chinese, Korean, and even Thai food. I love it. I love spicy food now, but it took me some years to really develop this tolerance for spiciness.
I have to say, if there is one weakness with French cuisine, it is precisely that. It's that the best you have is piment d'Espelette. And to me, piment d'Espelette is, like, basically a shade above paprika. It's just, you know.
Yeah, Exactly. No, you're right. That's the only spice I can think about. I remember like talking about it like a few months ago. I was like, what spice is that in French food? The piment d'Espelette is the only thing I can think about. And then, of course, like black pepper, but it's very spicy.
It's like her family will be like, ooh, Zapique. And then they'll open up a container full of maroilles, which is like this extremely stinky cheese, and just like eat it like it's nothing. And I'm like, huh. You know, it's just funny to show. It just goes to show the, you know, different tastes.
That's very funny.
Back to Maury. I love that to him, dishes like couscous, chibujen, and shawarma are French food. It's a far cry from bœuf bourguignon. Well, he didn't even know about bœuf bourguignon until he went to culinary school.
I learned the traditional French food in the high school. So before I go to the cuisine school, I don't cook some French dish. So I have to learn all the French culture of the food in the high school. So for me, it was a big work to know how you do a bœuf bourguignon the right way, the blanquette, because I never had to hit that. So cook a blanquette, I never tried that. So when I go to the high school, it's my first time with the French cuisine. I really feel love with that cuisine because we have a lot of techniques. So it's about tradition too. And the sauce is really important in the French cuisine. It's really the, if I have to keep one thing about French cuisine, is the work for the sauce.
Yeah, I have Ziploc bags in my freezer of sauce bordelaise that I made for my birthday a few months ago, and I just love sauce bordelaise. It's one of my favorites.
The sauce bordelaise is really a beautiful sauce. You have just to grill a steak and put that.
I know, and there's so much that goes into just one spoonful of that sauce, which is amazing.
And this brings me to the traditional food cultures of France. One of the greatest aspects of the country's culinary identity. I asked Dominique which food cultures he would be most interested in exploring. He had just a few things to say.
It's strange because you will think, of course, you grew up in France, like you try a lot of good food, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Southwest, all the ducks, all the like little earthy food, like cassoulet, all the stew, rich, like great ingredients. It's close to the Spanish border. A lot of high quality, like, you know, pork and good ingredients.
Yeah.
Lyon as well. Lyon's definitely like a great region. All the sausage, the Lyonnaise, all the little bistro, all the like the andouille and all. Andouille is more like from Brittany. But great food in Lyon as well. And Normandy, like, you know, you have all the oysters, some great seafood in north of France, the Cunyaman, of course.
Of course.
So the galettes, great butter, great cream. And I mean, it's hard. It's a hard question. I love the south of France as well. I love all the south, east of France, all the lemon, olive oil, peaches, all the fresh fruits. You know, France is like, it's so intricate because it's such a small country. It is very small. It's like smaller than Texas.
Yeah.
But there's high diversity of cultural like food that is specific to region. So each region has its own specialty. And cheese, I don't even want to start talking about cheese. Like there's like hundreds and hundreds type of cheese in France. And almost every town, every village has its own cheese. And they're all so different. They're all so unique. Yeah. So... yeah, tough question. I'm just getting hungry, like talking about it.
Oh, I know. I have a friend of mine, a French friend, who actually hypothesized that you could make a fat map of France, where like there's like the olive oil region, you know, towards Italy. There's like the like bird fat region, and then there's like the pork fat region, and then like a butter region. And it kind of all lines up.
I can see that. Yeah, you know, it's good fat. When it's treated the right way, it's good fat. For example, like let's talk about butter for a second. Like I've been, you know, working on a new recipe for croissant for a new shop opening in New York on 27th Street. We'll be opening soon. So I've been perfecting this like croissant recipe. I imported flour from France and imported butter from France. I've tried like thousands of butter from France.
Yeah.
All really, really good. All so unique and different.
I have to say, on that note, I had an aha moment when I went to Brittany, which I loved. I mean, all you need to know about Brittany is they have great crepes, great cider. They have great artichokes. They have great...
good butter.
I think they have great strawberries, great butter. And so, yeah, I went to a market and I was going to this vendor who's selling beurre de baratte. And the guy there, he made me do like a dégustation of butter, like just line them all up. Mm-hmm. And I had never done this before because I'm an American, you know, and like I think of butter as just being something like, you know, butter is butter, right? But I went down the line trying all these butters and my aha moment was that butter can be like cheese in the same, you know, heading in the same direction of that level of sort of complexity and flavor difference and textural differences. And that was really interesting, you know, especially when he was like talking me through all the different butters, and I was just taking spoonfuls of it himself and eating it, and clearly he had a lot of pride in the product. That to me was just amazing to see that, like you say, that level of tradition and specialization in these products is truly inspiring.
No, you know, I agree with you. I think French is like a super, super rich country. It's a beautiful country. There's so much assets and culture and food, you know, that took centuries to perfect. And, you know, when I look back, yes, you're talking about a degustation of butter. It sounds silly, but yes, yeah. It makes sense. You know, like you can have a degustation of oil, yeah, olive oil.
Absolutely.
Of course, a lot of people have had it before. It's the same way you taste the wine. You look at the color, you look at the fluidity, you smell it, you taste it, you find the notes in what you taste. It makes sense for me because I grew up with this kind of food culture where, you know, you get the best product and you search for the best product and you see the differences of what you can get on the market. It's the same for every ingredient you can think about in France. And you know, like the passion, the dedication that people have for doing what they do. Some people will spend their lifetime making butter, and not just like one person, from generations to generations and generation.
You know, whenever we go to France, it's just so cliche, but the first thing I look forward to doing is just having a baguette with butter. And I do, and I swear I'm not like acting this out. It's like this incredibly pleasurable experience for me to eat a baguette in France with butter in the morning. It's like the first, I get so excited about it. And Steph I think she gets it, but it's like, she doesn't have the same reaction. And I always tell her, French people need, they would actually be better served if they could have a little bit of shitty bread here and there, just to understand, to appreciate like what they have. Because like, all you know is really good bread everywhere, all the time, you know?
Yeah, but it's true. It's funny because one of the first thing I look when I go back to France is also baguette and butter. I think it's like, it's very important for me. Like it's, I don't know. It's comfort food for me. It's like, it makes me feel good.
I asked Dominique the question I ask all my guests. If you were trapped on a deserted island and you could eat only one French dish for the rest of your life, what would it be? Poor Dominique, his wide-spanning love for French food got the best of him.
Oh my God, I can't do that. One French dish? Oh my God, it's hard. One?
Yeah.
I can't think of hundreds of them right now. It's a tough question. I'm thinking, I love andouillette.
Mm.
Which is like this, like, intestine sausage.
So good.
It's very, very specific. I love tête de veau, mm-hmm. which is a cow's head.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the terrain. I love tripes. I can't even, I can't answer like just with one dish. I love Buddha. I love French food. I'm a huge fan of French food.
Is there one thing that you would go with?
One? No, I can't.
Okay. you'll raise the white flag. Okay.
I can give you a list. One list.
That's fair.
Stephanie managed to pick a dish. A dish, I should add, that she's cooked at home many times, and I can personally verify it is delicious.
I would pick soupe au pistou because it has pasta, it has beans, it has nice a flavor from the pistu, which is basically pesto, and lots of different vegetables. So I think that would be a good thing to have for the rest of my life on an island.
And maybe I'd be there with you. And maybe we'd have a little hunk of fourme d'Ambert and a nice baguette.
Yeah, I mean, it's cheating a little bit when I say cheese because, you know, I'm not going to pick one. It has to be a different, like, I want access to all the cheese.
A deserted island with a massive warehouse of cheese. That sounds like a pretty sweet place to be. And here's the dish that Maury chose.
Once again, at this, we've named the dibisogo. Dibisogo is the grilled meat, beef meat. We have to cook it in the really hard fire in the barbecue. So we have to marinate it with some mustard, onion, and pepper. And when you cook it in the grill, it takes a really smoky taste. And after that, we just to put some mix of spice we named Can Can Can. it's from Ivory Coast. And just beautiful. You have the spice and you have the spicy and you have the little onions. We have caramelized. Some are literally carbonate. And it's really good. So one dish is the dibisogo.
And that's it. If I had to sum it all up, to me, French food is, bear with me, kind of like a blossoming tree. It's a combination of deep roots in local tradition with a beautiful spectrum of colors from its many immigrant cultural influences. And taking things back to one of the local cultures of France, as far-flung as it may be, in the island of La Réunion, here's one last track from Landigo. It's called Cosa Nena, and it's a tribute to the foods of the island. Game meats, codfish, cucumber salad, eel cooked in tomato sauce, pumpkin bean curry, and the many fruits that call the island home. It's a culinary celebration in a song, and I think it's the perfect way to close out the episode. Enjoy Cosa Nena from Landigo. As always, if you like the show, please leave us a friendly review on Apple Podcasts. Merci to our guests Dominique Ancel, Maurice Sacco, and a gros bisou to Stephanie Jacquemont. Shout out to Landigo for the bangin' tunes. Please do check them out and buy their music. The group is spelled L-I-N-D-I-G-O. Shout out to Food 52, Harry Sultan, and most of all to Counter Jam's brilliant producer, Coral Lee. I'm Peter J. Kim, and I'll catch you on the next episode of Counter Jam.